heed not Mephistopheles, my children, lest you suffer eternal damnation. When he whispers in your ear, turn away your head and hearken instead to the angel on your shoulder.
Welcome to the Luciferian Research Society podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Crow. This is the second episode of the show. In this episode, we'll be talking about the various mythological characters that you encounter in the left-hand path. There's another submission for the Luciferian Research Society sigil, and we also share opinions on what is Lucifer and what is Satan, and how are they connected, and how does that connect with the other rebellious figures in various other traditions. And we'll also be featuring two songs by members of the LRS.
Sit tight, honey. I'm coming right back.
Where are you going?
I'm going to tell off the devil.
Let's talk about Satan first. Satan is a Hebrew word that means adversary or accuser. And that was essentially the role that he played, but it was the adversary and accuser of man. This was shown in the Old Testament book of Job, where God calls all of his angels for a council, and Satan is one of the angels among them. He is an agent of God in that book, and goes on to test and tempt a character named Job, a mortal human. It wasn't until later that the idea started to become more of a devil figure that was an opposite kind of alternate force, an evil force in the universe, which harkens back to the Zoroastrian philosophy, where Zoroaster told people that there were two gods, essentially, two main forces in the universe. The good one was Ahura Mazda, and there was an evil one, and his name was Ahriman. And they were eternally struggling, but they were both equally matched. But you still had to try and fight for the good anyways, is what the Zoroastrian religion taught. There were sides that did... branches of the Zoroastrian religion that did actually revere Ahriman. Now, Satan started to become considered almost like Ahriman, in that he was an alternate force in the universe, almost like the evil god as opposed to the good god. Although in the Christian belief system, God was still greater than Satan and would eventually win in the end. But it was getting very close to the Zoroastrian dualism. The idea that Satan was an angel cast out of heaven is developed in some of the books where, well, Revelations in particular refers to the angel being cast out of heaven. And I'll go over that a little bit more in detail when we talk about Lucifer.
Hey, what's with you? Who are you talking to?
Nobody. I just rehearsed my speech.
Lucifer is a Latin word that means light bearer or bearer of light. It pre-exists Christianity, the term. It was used by the Romans to describe the planet Venus when they saw it in the morning as the last bright object in the sky before the sun rises. Just as the sun's rising, you can sometimes see the planet Venus still bright in the sky, holding out against the light of the sun and almost calling the sun forth. It's a sign that the sun is about to show up before it actually shows up, when you see just Venus in the sky and it's starting to get a bit brighter, of course. The word Lucifer indicates the bringing forth of light from the darkness. And this is how I view this. The darkness in a person is the part that they have rejected or suppressed or tried very hard not to notice about themselves, because it just doesn't fit with what they want to believe about themselves, or because of pressures put on them by society that they have pushed this part down in themselves. This includes traumatic events that have happened that you aren't able to process at the time with the mental faculties that you had available to you. Usually in childhood this happens. Lots of things that wouldn't be traumatic to an adult are traumatic to a child. A coping mechanism is developed to kind of cover that up, to compensate for that trauma. And by trauma, it simply means something that cannot be processed. So instead, it creates a workaround, essentially, in your psyche. Now, this blocks the knowledge of it from your conscious mind and creates darkness. It creates a shadow in your own mind. And this compilation of all the darkness is what Carl Jung called the shadow. It's a personification of your, it's like your evil twin or doppelganger. It's the part of you that keeps this knowledge away from your conscious mind. And now sometimes it's not just, sometimes you can bring up in your consciousness individual components, but you can never see the whole picture. This is a very similar concept to, this connects with Satan, as the ruler of hell and the keeper of lost souls. This also connects with the Greco-Roman god of the underworld, which was Hades or Pluto. It's this dark place that the lost souls are held, and they're not allowed to escape.
You fool. You unmitigated, abysmal fool.
This leads us to Prometheus, who is a Greco-Roman god. He's one of the Titans, which were considered to be the elder gods of the system. They were the ones that were in power before, but kind of got overthrown by the Olympian gods. These are the ones that we typically think of as planets. The names of the planets that we use now are the Roman names of these gods. Prometheus is sometimes considered to be the creator of humanity, having created them out of clay. Sometimes he's just considered a benefactor and protector of humanity. Zeus in the Greek, or Jupiter in the Roman pantheon, was king of the Olympian gods, god of gods, or king of gods. He liked the situation that he had going with the humans, who were at the time very much like the other animals and completely ignorant, and did not have control of fire or anything like that, but were very subservient to Zeus and the other Olympian gods. Prometheus didn't like this situation. He felt that humans were capable of a lot more. So he snuck into the abode of the gods, took the fire from the hearth of Hephaestus or Vulcan, depending on the pantheon that you're talking about here, and he brings it back down the mountain, Mount Olympus, and brings it to the humans and teaches them how to control the fire and how to use it and all kinds of things that come out of that, which is essentially warfare, metalcraft, even cosmetics, they say, is one of the things that were taught to the humans, but this forbidden knowledge that they weren't allowed to have from the king of gods, but they were given it anyways. And Zeus got really pissed off about this, so he punished Prometheus by chaining him to a mountain, sometimes they say, or sometimes they say a boulder. Either way, it's a large mass of earth. Basically, he earthbound Prometheus, and an eagle would come and peck out the liver of Prometheus and eat it every day, and in the night it would grow back, and so he had to experience this suffering. Now, eventually, Prometheus is released with the help of Heracles, or Hercules. That's the part of the story that I'd like to discuss at this point. As you may have already noticed, there's a lot of very strong parallels between this story and the story of the tempting serpent in Eden. And therefore, a lot of people, myself included, think of Prometheus as a light bearer type archetype. Very, very similar and almost identical to the concept that many Christians have of Lucifer, although from another perspective, the serpent in Eden, a Gnostic perspective. Now, I know I'm throwing a lot of terms out here. So Gnostic is a word that means based off of gnosis, which is the Greek word for knowledge. And it's not just information about something. This is direct experiential knowledge. Something you know to be true rather than something you simply know stuff about. And it is very similar to the story of Prometheus. And so a lot of people do connect Lucifer with Prometheus.
Stop whispering in my ear, devil.
In the Sumerian culture, as well as in the Babylonian culture as well, they believed in a series of gods. One of the most important ones was Enki, and he was one of these light-bearer figures. As I mentioned before, he lives in the ground, underground, in a submerged cave, submerged underwater, submarine, subterranean dwelling. This is a classic example of something that's below the level of conscious awareness. He was said to have looked like a part goat, part fish, like the modern symbol that we use for Capricorn. Now, a fish would be a resident of the subconscious, symbolically. A goat, there's been a very strong thread through history of associating goats with lustiness and independence and even evil or darkness. A fish and a goat combined does have that dual function understanding, and it does fit very much with the concept of Lucifer and all of these other light bearer figures. Even in his actions, in the stories that we have surviving from that period of time, Enki had a brother named Enlil. And as we see through history, that name does get changed to El, which is God, and it is actually one of the names that is used for God in Judaism. Enlil decides that he is going to eliminate the human race, the human species of animal on the planet. He is going to wipe them out. There were several different methods that he tried, but every time he was going to wipe them out a certain way, Enki would go and teach them something that would prevent them from succumbing to the disaster that Enlil was about to unleash on them. So to prevent them from succumbing to famine, he taught them methods of acquiring more food, such as cultivating plants, domesticating animals, hunt better methods of hunting, including metalworking. That seems to be a theme that always comes up in this, is metalworking is one of the arts that is a forbidden art that was taught to the humans. Another of these disasters was the flood. Enlil decided that one of the methods he was going to use was to just create a flood and it would drown all of the humans. And he warned the humans of this as well, and they were able to survive through creating boats and vessels that would survive this.
You got a way of putting things which makes sense.
Another figure that comes up a fair bit in left-hand path occultism is Odin from Norse mythology. The All-Father, he's called. He has that title in that branch of spirituality. Now, he is the father of all gods, and one of the main stories about him is how he sacrificed himself by hanging from a tree, or being nailed to a tree, and he descended into the underworld, into Hel, H-E-L, and while he was gone in on this otherworldly journey, he attained the knowledge of the runes, which he brought back with him and shared with humanity. Now, the runes are essentially an alphabet, a series of characters that represent sounds, as well as other concepts are associated with them as well. And each one represents one of the various forces of nature, or even a god in the Norse mythology.
We're going south together.
On a vacation? To Florida?
Further south. It's 100 times hotter.
Now, Set is yet another archetype of the god against the gods. The Temple of Set actually came out of the Church of Satan as a transcendental branch of Satanism, as opposed to the atheistic Levian branch. And they saw this force of darkness, this god against the gods archetype, as something real that's objectively out there. But first, you have to connect with it in yourself. But once you start connecting with it in yourself, then you do start to experience this resonance with something on an objective level out there in the universe around you. Now, Set is actually one of the ancient Egyptian gods. Ancient Egyptian gods are shown with some sort of animal head. Not all of them. Osiris is often just seen simply as a green man. Isis was usually seen with a human face and head. Set clearly is one of these ancient Egyptian gods that are shown with an animal head, but it's the one god that the animal is unrecognizable, which a lot of people have tried to interpret it as this or that animal, but nobody's really been able to conclusively say Set is a man with the head of a specific animal. That hasn't been done. Now, some people believe that this is intentional, that this was a creation of something unnatural, something not recognizable, and that was the point of it. It wasn't trying to be a specific animal. It was trying to be something, look like an animal, but an animal that nobody was familiar with. So, to boil it all down, all of these seem to focus around the character of the god against the gods, who is willing to help humanity, even in rebellion against the natural order of things, in order to elevate humanity to another stage or another level of potential. Here's a song from Pleasure the Priestess. We have another submission for the LRS Sigil Challenge that didn't make it into the enhanced portion of the first episode of the podcast because we were unable to retrieve the image last time. But this is the one that was done by Keith. Now, you can check this out on the Luciferian Research Society network. You can find that at luciferianresearch.org. And it's under the LRS Sigil discussion thread. Keith has his own online community that he asked us to mention on the podcast. It is based off of Yahoo Group's email lists, and it's called From Darkness Comes Light. And it is essentially an online resource center for occult research, primarily texts, ebooks, articles that would be of interest to esoteric Freemasons, Hermeticists, occultists of all sorts. This is Chris Gant's submission for the opinion on Lucifer versus Satan. He writes, "I guess I'll toss my opinion in here. It's my belief that all mystical and supernatural deities are ideas that represent notions of emotion and nature. That being said, I see Satan, or Azazel, as the dark side of Yahweh and Middle Eastern philosophy. Satan represents chaos, selfishness, death, and a general disrespect for the future, something that will drag humankind backwards and away from enlightenment. He is part of Yahweh and serves him, in my opinion. Lucifer, on the other hand, I view as a symbol of logic and order and righteous rebellion against Yahweh. To me, he is the idea of forward and rational thinking. He is life and the future of humankind, true logical altruism and fairness, the idea that will lead us to the stars, just like Galileo and everyone else that went against the church in search of justice and enlightenment. He is both Venus and Athena in one."
Shut up, Memopopolis.
We have another submission, which explains some opinion about the character of Satan and Prometheus in this case. This is actually a section out of Percy Shelley's preface to his lyrical drama Prometheus Unbound. So this is the author's own opinion. "The only imaginary being resembling in any degree Prometheus is Satan. And Prometheus is, in my judgment, a more poetical character than Satan, because, in addition to courage and majesty, and firm and patient opposition to omnipotent force, he is susceptible to being described as exempt from the taints of ambition, envy, revenge, and a desire for personal aggrandizement, which, in the hero of Paradise Lost, interfere with the interest. The character of Satan engenders in the mind a pernicious casuity which leads us to weigh his faults with his wrongs, and to excuse the former because the latter exceed all measure. In the minds of those who consider that magnificent fiction with a religious feeling, it engenders something worse. But Prometheus is, as it were, the type of the highest perfection of moral and intellectual nature, impelled by the purest and the truest motives to the best and noblest ends." So clearly he does associate Satan and Prometheus as very similar types of characters. He personally prefers the character of Prometheus because it feels more pure to him. And we can see in this that Percy Shelley did have a sense of morality that put the greater good above his own personal self-interest, clearly. He does list the quest for personal aggrandizement as a negative in Satan. That's something that we can kind of forgive because of the other virtues that he expresses in his actions and words in Paradise Lost, Milton's Paradise Lost. We have another song we'd like to play for you from one of the members of the LRS. His name is Adam, and the music is under the name False Prion. And this song is called Levitate. That's the show. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe stay tuned for our next episode, which will be on the subject of lucid dreaming and astral projection.
Beat it.